He is Robin Leach. This is Car Keys.
I want to start out with a warning announcement for people who do a lot of nighttime driving between dusk in the afternoon and early dawn in the morning before the light fades in the afternoon, as the light fades in the afternoon and before the light comes back in the morning. And it is a very serious situation, which I do not know how to address other than to alert anybody who's listening who does this kind of driving to pay good attention to the next minute or two of this rant. It is the fact that there are people who are driving on the roads in this timeline, as I said before, beginning with dusk into darkness and darkness into light, without their headlights on. I was in a evening drive from the northwest corner, listening area, down to Fairfield County, Connecticut, a few nights ago, doesn't matter when you hear this show, when there was a rather strong, strong stormy weather pattern going on, which included a lot of heavy rain. I was on a multi-lane road, Route 8 in Connecticut, for approximately 40 miles, and saw between 6 and 9 vehicles, saw is a funny word because you couldn't really see them, driving in the same direction I was going, doesn't matter whether it was north or south, without their headlights on. And some of them passed me when I was in the right side, the travel lane as we call it, and in the left lane, and others I passed. With all these cars, the taillights and the front headlights are not turned on. And with at least 6 of the vehicles I went by, the headlight, there were no daytime running lights. With a couple of the others, the daytime running lights were on, which are, in many cases of older cars, not very bright and do not really display or show much light visibility of the, and therefore visibility of the roads ahead of these cars going. The fact that there were between 6 and 9 vehicles that I counted on the roads in this inclement weather situation and who failed to have any lighting on either end of their car on during this course was a very scary situation. Traffic was traveling at the posted speed limit or higher on this particular stretch of road despite the heavy rain that was coming down. And it was bad enough trying to see the lighted cars at the distance between lighted cars in the heavy rain, even with the wipers going, not to mention what was happening when you tried to maybe think about passing and you didn't know whether there was a darked out, blacked out car, that is a car with no headlights coming down the passing lane, and you couldn't see out of your rear window because if it didn't have a rear wiper, the rain was pretty heavy on the windows and you could not see much going on behind you. This has been, I've noted this for a number of months, and but it seems to be an increasing situation. I do not know whether the drivers are deliberately driving this way, have no clue that their headlights aren't on, and also have no clue that they are invisible during this time frame. Doesn't matter if it's raining or not. So if you are driving on roads, it could be even on two-lane roads around our listing area. There are people who are not driving with their headlights on, and if they don't have daytime running lights of any significant brilliance, the front ends of their cars are as invisible as the rear ends are, no matter which direction you're going and where you are in relation to them. So much for that. That's a safety tip or a safety warning. Because
we'll do it at the beginning of the show, but what I find baffling, I appreciate the options, but you know, one of your first responsibilities as a motorist and a fellow earthling is to look around and know what your environment is. And
okay,
if it's...
but that, unfortunately, that is a very wonderful suggestion, but it isn't happening.
Yeah, but and so I've just...
So here's a footnote to this discussion I've just had for those who are listening. I happened to follow a person the other evening from Hotchkiss School in our listening area to Sharon on Route 41. It was... Her taillights were not lit up. It was clear that she did not have her headlights on also because I saw several times during the course of following this, turned out to be a woman, didn't matter if it's a woman or man, the driver, was holding her it's the car's turn signal, which is usually the way you switch many of the lights from dim to bright, and the ones that are not automatic. Pulling it towards you usually turns the high beams on, whether the headlights on or not, so you can flash vehicles or do whatever you want to do with that feature. She used this particular vehicle, this particular way to illuminate the highway because she did not know how to turn the headlights on in the vehicle she was using. I know this because I followed her to her destination in Sharon. And when she got out of the car, I politely, almost scared her, but I politely asked her if I could give her some advice about her use of the car because I had followed her from Sharon and I know that she did not have her headlights on. Her first response was, "Oh, thank you very much." Second response was, "It's a rental car." And here we go with rental cars. They may be new cars, mostly new cars, and nobody tells you how to use these cars when you go to pick them up at a rental pickup place. But this woman drove 6 miles, daytime running lights on, which gave her a limited front view of the road, but had no idea that her backside of the car was lightless. And while my headlights shone on the back side of her car and showed the reflector lenses, which are in many bumpers, without those, you could have come up in that car. You might not have seen that car if your headlights were on dim or, you know, whatever, as nicely as you should be able to see all vehicles in the nighttime darkness of driving.
Well, plus, many years ago, not for the same reasons, I've followed somebody or I attempted to caravan with somebody over, you know, fairly mountainous, let's just say, from Millerton, New York, if you don't know, of the shortcut over sort of into West Cornwall, very windy. And the reason I'm mentioning it is because halfway through, we realized that she had failed to put her lights on. And it was November, and it was pretty scary.
Well, this is not a new problem, but it is an increasingly frequent problem I am noticing
right
at driving. And I do not know why it's going on, but it is a very dangerous way to be driving your vehicle. It doesn't matter what the weather is, but in the darkness.
Noted.
So that's the safety warning to drivers to watch out if you are driving on these roads, especially when cars are coming at you in the darkness with no lights on in the front.
I know, it's a little disconcerting.
You do not want to pass a vehicle in a dark road in many cases because of this, because you might just find yourself pulling out and there had not been enough illumination in front of you or the car you might be passing to have illuminated anybody coming your way with total lights out situation in their cars.
All right, so before you get onto your other topics, I just wanted to ask you, I just thought this was so disingenuous. The Rivian recall?
I haven't read about it, but maybe I have.
They said that, it only involved something like 18,000 cars.
Well, they haven't made more than those.
That's correct. So unless you know that they haven't made more than those, in other words, they recalled everything. But
okay.
Unless you know that they haven't made more, the way that it was presented is not, we've recalled everything we've made, but rather a number.
There are not enough Rivians around here for anybody probably to be listening to this show, but I would love to think that a Rivian owner was listening to this show. But there's another brewing problem in the Hyundai and Kia manufacturers with over 500,000, an estimated 10 million Hyundai and Kia vehicles on the road lack something called an engine immobilizer. And apparently it has been found out by the techies in the world and is known to all people who want to steal cars that Hyundai vehicles from 2011 forward in many cases, not to present ones, can be stolen very easily once you break into it because there are no engine immobilizers in these cars. And so Hyundai and Kia vehicles apparently are being stolen, I would say, in most urban areas as opposed to country areas, throughout the country. And Hyundai and Kia are now facing a major public problem, public relations problem in trying to solve this situation. It's not worth discussing the details but there are a lot of older vehicles I know around, and I had one myself probably, but my current hybrid, which is a 2013, has an engine immobilizer because it doesn't use a key to insert it into a key lock on the steering column or the car to start the vehicle. All the cars that are subject to this theft capability, easy theft capability, are cars that use actual keys like the old days when no cars had engine immobilizers that we used to use to start vehicles. So the Rivian recall is one thing. There's 18,000 vehicles. We have not had a lot of recall discussion on recent shows because the recalls have been, in my opinion, either not necessarily serious or worth discussing, although maybe somebody might say take issue with that. Having just finished talking about the recall situation, let's go to Ford Lightning trucks, specifically the Ford Lightning trucks, because I have yet to see one in this corner. And I've said on past shows that the kind of population we have here is very current with new cars, and you often see new lines of vehicles show up in one form or another around our northwest corner in not too long after they come out. The Rivian truck, which we were just discussing, is one. There are two or three, and I also had an interview on a recent show that I reported on, having met a Rivian owner and having a very happy experience with his truck. And I don't think he knew anything about the recall. But the Ford Lightning is a predecessor for the new electric line of light pickup trucks at the moment that are going to be coming on stream or already starting to come on stream around the country. But it has also become very clear and is now publicly being discussed that these electric pickup trucks are not going to be really very useful for any heavy-duty hauling of heavy trailers and or heavy loads in the back of the pickup beds. And there's now a headline out saying that heavier-duty pickup trucks and heavier-duty trucks in general, whether they're pickups or parcel trucks like UPS trucks and panel vans, are not going to be going as fast, being converted as fast to electric, total electric use because of exactly the problem of heavy-duty hauling and heavy-duty loading is just absolutely draining batteries in under 100 miles in many cases for the tests that have been going on using these vehicles for those purposes and with the current technology that is existing. I've talked to several pickup truck owners, and they have an interest in the electric pickup, but they don't have any interest once they hear that if they are using their pickups for heavy-duty hauling, whether it be in the pickup bed behind the cab or in the hauling of trailers, mobile homes, or not mobile homes, anything that has a considerable amount of weight, being a boat or whatever, they are not going to go very far before they need to find a charging station. And unless they have fast charging capability, that's not going to be any better than having no charging stations nearby because it takes too long to recharge these batteries in these trucks. And if they're going to fade after 50 to 100 miles of use, you're not going to go very far very quickly in any given day. And since pickup trucks are used in motorhome touring all over the country and hauling a lot of things, I think the electric pickups are going to be used by the people who already buy pickup trucks in lieu of passenger car vehicles because they like the idea of the pickup truck toughness and look as opposed to the regular passenger vehicles we have. And those will get adequate range, just like the current crop of electric cars will, because anything 200 to 400 miles, I think the Rivian already gets, possibly has a range in the 300 to 400 mile range with the big battery pack. But those will be useful, but they're never going to carry anything of significant weight because you won't go very far. So that's that on the electric truck, the electric pickup truck industry.
Okay.
And I keep seeing UPS trucks and other trucks around coming from depots that are far away, as I said in another recent show, and I don't know how those will ever be able to be fully electrified for delivery in the more remote places that are not, let's say, within 10 or 15 miles of the place where they get themselves loaded up overnight. And they're also going to be loaded with weighty objects, which will add to the comment that I just made about pickup trucks being used to haul heavy load factors. I don't know what else. We hope Jay's going to come back from Europe soon to join me on the show and give me an update on what's going on over there. Tesla continues to outsell all the luxury European marks on quarterly-based sales basis right now. Tesla has really got the market by its tail because they have so much experience in electric car technology. They've figured out how to give cars with adequate ranges. Everybody who has a Tesla that I talk to loves their Tesla, and I use the brand name as opposed to the electric vehicle situation, because while there are others on, the Mustang Mach-E is apparently very successful in its sales pitch, but I don't know what its numbers are. And I have talked about people who are purchasing Toyota RAV4s, mostly hybrids, which are not plug-in, but some with plug-in hybrids. And I have mentioned the situation with these plug-in hybrids, that if you do not drive a lot of miles on a daily basis, you can go weeks or months without putting gas in it. So you should put a gas stabilizer in plug-in hybrid vehicles that are not used for long-distance daily drives, where you do transfer from battery to fossil fuel, the engine, the backup engines that are in them. If you go, in many cases, it's over 40 miles a day without being able to connect to a charger. Gas stabilizer has been used for years in a lot of vehicles that are stored in garages and not driven for months at a time because it maintains the benefits of gasoline, that gasoline can go stale if they do not have stabilizers in them and could cause problems in the gas lines and or other engine functions if you did not put stabilizer in. So I think stabilizer is going to be it's sort of like death fuel for diesel engine cars. You're going to want to put stabilizer in your plug-in hybrids if you are not going to be driving long enough to get the engines to burn up gasoline, requiring you to replenish the gas tank periodically, which would negate the need for an engine gas stabilizer component in your gas tank. The other thing that's interesting is about, which I'm trying to find an answer to, is dealers, and when you get your oil change at many dealers, they put stickers on your windows that range anywhere from 3,500 miles for suggested oil changes to 5,000, maybe 7,000 in some cases between oil changes. We now use, all the new cars virtually use synthetic oil. And decades ago in last century, when Mobil 1 first came out, Mobil 1 was telling you could go 25,000 miles between an oil change, but you should do a filter change of 15,000 miles. That no longer seems to be an option offered by the oil companies, except that I've seen on some Mobil synthetic cases that it's good for 10,000 miles. I agree that if you're using synthetic oil, you should not have to change your oil in less than 7,500 miles, no matter what the sticker on your windshield might tell you. I think I'm not a mechanic and I am not a scientist, so I can't guarantee that that is true. But that's my thought on that subject of synthetic oil being used, oil changes, and it's needless. It's a waste of money and resources to change it in under 7,500 miles, and in many cases, 10,000 miles is plenty. Safety. I think I'm settled with the safety on this show with talking about driving in fairly nighttime light conditions. Visibility. Oh, no, I've got something else to say. I've had a recent brush with a family accident, which involved a vehicle of mine being sideswiped by another driver coming at this vehicle in the lane that this vehicle was traveling. And the driver of the vehicle, and it was not me, was unable to evade the car, oncoming car, because the road, it was a two-lane city street with curbing on the side and other obstacles keeping this person from being able to avoid being struck, I guess, by the oncoming car. It was clearly not the driver's fault of my vehicle, but it was a very scary situation, and we do not know whether the driver was distracted, asleep, or otherwise
impaired,
unable to change his course of direction, and struck my car on its side. Fortunately, not a head-on collision, but it was a very scary situation. And the driver of that car was so traumatized that she is not going to be able to drive a car for a couple of days, I don't think. But that really brings the idea of distracted driving due to many factors that can occur inside a vehicle to the forefront of this person who had never had an accident in her life and now sits there and worries about any cars coming towards her down on a two-lane street or any street because of what happened to her in a recent impacting accident that occurred to this woman. Keep your eyes on the road. Do not reach over to change the radio station or anything that happens to make your eyes leave the road. And this was in broad daylight, so I can't say don't worry if it's daylight versus night, night driving. Because it can happen to any time, and the reality is that somebody could come down in her lane at her and not try to avoid hitting her. And she was only able to avoid a head-on collision because she was able to move just enough to the side of the road so that it wasn't a direct impact.
He is Robin Leach. This is Car Keys.